Okay, good morning. It is May 2nd, 2023, and this is Buddhism and the 12 Steps. And I am sitting in for Kevin Griffin, who is normally here. He's recovering from a cold. He's doing much better, but he's just wanting to take some time and rest and take care of himself. So he asked me to fill in for him, which I am gratefully and humbly doing. it's my pleasure to be here. So we begin the class with about a 20-minute meditation, and then a short teaching, and then some time left over for some questions or reflections, comments. And that's how it will go this morning. So I'm going to be talking a little bit today about a topic called, many of you know these, the hindrances or the challenges that Buddha described as obstacles on the path in our practice. And obstacles on specifically for him in practice, but also on the way to ultimate enlightenment. And of course, we learn to apply these. We look at the hindrances in terms of recovery in many ways, in as if we're looking at, well, the 12-step program calls them character defects, right? And so if we can think about it, those human tendencies, you know, hindrances common to all, character defects, that term sort of tends to make it more personalized. So if we can look at our human tendencies as something that we all share, that can be looked at closely, that we can understand them and learn from them and ultimately be free of them in one way or another, either momentarily or maybe for quite some time. What a good feeling that is, right? So, the meditation may or may not include elements of ways to, the primary way, of course, to work with a hindrance or a challenge in our practice is to shine the light of awareness, mindfulness on that mind state or body state or emotion, to see it clearly, to recognize the unsatisfactory, unpleasant nature of it. And then also to recognize it when they're there, but the Buddha also instructed to recognize it when they're gone, when there's the absence of a hindrance or the hindrances. And then if they persist and stay around a while, there's a few more things we can do. We can wisely investigate, look to see where that's affecting our somatic body, see where it's causing the distress, and thereby, you know, helping us be motivated to be free of it or to let go. So enough talking. Let us settle into our meditation posture. And I heard an instruction recently that if you're feeling, you know, if you're particularly feeling particularly tense or restless or agitated, it might be a good idea to take a little bit more relaxed posture. Not so much that you're going to be, you know, falling asleep, but just, you know, to have that intention, you know, set in your mind to really tend to the unpleasant nature of the agitation in a kind way. And if you are feeling more aware of what, you know, how your state of being is in this moment, just to always just to be bringing in a level of care and kindness, otherwise known as a non-judgmental attitude towards your experience. So settling in to a posture that feels relaxed and alert. Closing your eyes. With a soft, steady gaze in front of you. Eyes cast downward. And just sensing into the body, the physical form. The shape and the weight of it. This fathom long body. You might notice the contact points where the body meets the cushion, the chair, the couch, the floor. Settling in and becoming present for this experience of being a live human being. All the sensations that become pronounced when we become still. Pulses, the tingles, the heat, the coolness. Checking in and saying a warm hello to whatever emotional state is here. Whatever mental, emotional energy is swirling about. And as we begin to settle the body, we might notice the mind settling as well. And if not, know that it's available in increasing measure as we learn to relax the body and let go bit by bit. Our mindfulness practice teaches us to turn toward that which is here. Right now, in the present moment. Not judging or criticizing. Noticing the wish for things to be different, perhaps. Recognizing what is here and allowing, giving it some space. Giving giving it some room to roam. And the breath, the breathing helps with giving it a little more space to be here. So tuning into the breath a little bit more deeply. With some curiosity. Noticing how the sensations of breathing change on the in-breath and changing on the out-breath. With the breath, we can see directly into the changing nature of experience, which of course is happening inside us, in our thoughts and emotions, and also outside of us. With sounds, for example. So the invitation is to rest in this aliveness of the present moment experience, in all of these various experiences, resting. Riding a particular wave. Resting on the breath. The wave of the breath. Feeling grounded in the body while all this is happening. Resting in presence. if there are persistent thoughts. Note what they are. If there's a lot of planning for the future, for example. An opportunity to put those thoughts on the back burner and shine the light of awareness on what's going on here and now in your experience. Back to the breath. Back to the body. Moment by moment, by moment. Often I like to take a moment just to, after meditation, after a sit, just to notice, the quality of my attention after a sit, the condition of my mind and my body. Just notice if there's any change. And also that transition from non-doing to doing, from sitting, from resting in presence to talking, to listening. These little transitions in our lives can really help us tune into a real sense of what mindfulness is really all about, and to, learn to really embody it in our day-to-day living. And I often forget to, remember the transitions, that, can be very helpful. So I mentioned earlier that we're going to be exploring a little bit about the hindrances. And the reason this came up for today is that I've been going through Kevin's Buddhism in the 12-Step Workbook. A little plug for you, Kevin. Here you go. We're in week 8, and we just finished the 4th step. And so we spent a couple of sessions on it and a couple of classes on it. And for me, I've been working through it too. And what came up for me was actually through a series of other things too, but I confronted or worked with something in my 4th step, which I hadn't really ever worked on. Okay. This is many, many, many years. Just don't want to look at that. Anyone have that experience? Something that was painful and shameful, something I did to somebody else. And, and it's been really an incredible experience to have that, to have a sense of freedom around it, and understanding the clarity of where that was coming from. And once I got through the emotional firestorm of it all, I can move on to how I want to proceed with that. It's not actually available to make amends directly, but just realizing that, well, part of it is a living amends, just, growing up, maturing, living with integrity, knowing what is harmful, knowing what's not harmful. having that perspective, of course, having that wider perspective, only gleaned through recovery, from stopping my addiction to alcohol. That's where it all started, and then sort of blossomed as I studied and practiced the Dharma more, and which is probably what enabled me to look at it now. Because I know now I can be with these things. I can be with the terror of it all. I can be with it now without being swept away by it, without going into a deep, dark depression or panic, So, I've been, all of us here have dealt with addiction. And so we've, for years, maybe decades, have developed this muscle of craving, over and over, developing that, strengthening that muscle. And now, I'm strengthening the muscle of, equanimity, maybe, I don't know. So that's what's possible. So the 5 hindrances. Okay, I'll lay them out for you. I'll just name them right off. So sensual desire is the first one. Aversion, of course, the flip side to desire is the second. The third one is sloth and torpor, or sleepiness. The fourth is paired restless and worry. Restlessness being more flavor of the body, worry more of the mind, and doubt. So there are these five that the Buddha identified as being hindrances to the path, as I said earlier. So, as I said earlier too, we have to get to know them to be free of them. And the, you know, we sit in meditation, it's kind of an inventory, speaking of the fourth step, it's like a mental inventory, right? It's an ongoing process. It's not a one and done like many things. They're very common, as I said. And our tendency is to suppress them or indulge in them. And what he taught was the middle way, right? Sort of trying to achieve this balance between those two extremes. And these appear in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness of Dhammas, which are described different things, but categories of experience, really. And the hindrances are sort of the first things we come to, and it culminates in the Four Noble Truths. And he gives, you know, directions about how to work with these hindrances. And we'll get into a little bit of that. I want to get into that. So I'm probably going to get to that more quickly, I hope, because it's more helpful to understand how we can work with them, because I think we all know them pretty personally by now, especially this group. It's almost like we've been in a retreat for 3 years, many of us. And so, you know, let's get to the, you know, but I wanted to, because I love these similes, because the Buddha talked about the hindrances manifesting in the mind first as bowls, water. So there's five bowls of water. First bowl, there's water and it's clear, right? The natural bowl of water is clear, free of diversion or free of contaminants. So when desire is present, it's like the desire is similar to the water mixed with dye, with colorful dye, right? We can get mesmerized. We can get distracted by all the desire that's in our world and in our inner world and outside. I mean, so we can't see clearly. So our perception's colored. Second one, aversion, resembles water boiling, right? So the bowl of water is steaming and boiling. So because of aversion, we get heated. And we can really feel that, right? It's easier to feel aversion, anger, ill will, frustration, than it is perhaps maybe desire on its surface, because desire is often pleasant, right? But if we really investigate and really get, you know, curious about desire, it's painful. Painful that our perception is clouded, that we only see tunnel view, we only see our small limited self, right? Sloth and torpor is compared to water overgrown with algae. So there's a stagnation, there's this heaviness, right? There's this lack of balance and energy. Restless and worry affect the mind stirred by wind. So this water is so choppy, you can't see clearly, you can't see through it. So it's as if you're sort of out there on a boat being tossed around, and it, you know, you get pretty nauseous, right? When you're being tossed about on the boat. Make yourself sick with worry, makes me think of that. I come from a long line of worriers, so that's been a hindrance, restlessness too, that I work on. And then doubt is like dark and muddy water. It's like a thick, dark substance. And, you know, think of it, it's like the middle of the night when it's completely black in the room and you're trying to find the door to the bathroom. Lately, I've been like ending up on my dresser and I'm like, where am I? And then I go over to the pictures on the wall and I finally find the doorknob. It's very confusing and it can get very scary. And in its extreme form, maybe some of you know this, we can get paralyzed by it, right? I think of perfectionism as something that doubt really is kind of, I think perfectionism is a combination of all five in many ways. And doubt, though, is sort of the one that comes to fore when I think of perfectionism. I could tell you a really good story about that, but I don't have time. and so there's those five. And then so there's, when we're free of them, the simile, these similes are, this simile is designed to get the emotional quality, the emotional, the felt sense of when we're free from a hindrance, right? It's that felt sense. So when it's removed, like when desire is removed, it's like being free from debt, like a heavy debt. So you can imagine maybe you had a credit card debt for decades and then you're finally free of it, or a mortgage, or a debt you owe to somebody in some way, right? Desire, when desire is removed or let go of, it's like aversion. It's like recovery from a physical illness, right? It's that relief of that dis-ease of being recovered from a physical illness. Maybe some of us can understand, know that from personal experience, the freedom in that. Sloth and torpor, like being released from prison. The prison of a heavy, like, weight, being lifted, being freed from prison. He said restlessness and worry is to be free from the form, from the agitation of restless and worry is like being liberated from slavery, right? The ties that bind you. And then doubt, to overcome doubt is like crossing a dangerous desert safely. So this has been described as like crossing a desert in the middle of the night and you have all your possessions with you and you come out the other side without being harmed. So your body and your possessions are not harmed. So I like to bring those up because they're just, you know, that felt sense of being freed from a hindrance. And then also, so if you like that, then also if you like more of the image of the water, also the boiling water, for example, the wind whipped up by worry, the water whipped up by worry, or mud, doubt. So why do we care? Why do we care? Of course, I mean, we know in our practice and we know from our experience in our daily life and in recovery, we worked through some steps. We did a fifth step and shared with someone we trusted. We made amends. We do a 10th step. We know how freeing these burdens can be, right? We know. And yet we forget. We can get caught up. We can get caught up. It's like we put that one down. We go, okay, good, done, feel good. And then something else takes its place. I mean, that's the nature of impermanence, right? So we realize, though, through practice that I think one of the main major points is that we realize that because of the impermanence, because we're aware of the impermanence, that these things come and go, that there is no solidity to them. Even though I held on to that, to that particularly painful, by putting it out of my mind, but in my body, and when I did think about it, I was just racked with regret, worry, pain, and my body took a toll. I mean, over time, even though I wasn't paying attention to it. So, but once a light shined on it and wisely and carefully and kindly investigated, it's like, oh. Was it really there to begin with? There really is no solid sense of it. You know, it's this idea of it's like, it is not me. It is not mine, you know, that aspect, not self, anatta. So I wanted to read a passage. It's a summary of a discourse that this is from Satipatthana, The Direct Path to Realization by Anālio, which who is a great translator of the discourses. And so he's talking about a passage, and I'll just read this here, that demonstrates the importance of clearly recognizing mental defilements, the hindrances, for what they are. Oh, and by the way, the hindrances are really a manifestations of greed, hatred, and delusion, right? The three poisons that create so much suffering, right? So much suffering. This discourse reports the monk Aniruddha complaining to his friend Sariputta that despite concentrative attainments, unshaken energy, and well-established mindfulness, he was unable to break through to full realization. In reply, Sariputta pointed out that Aniruddha's boasting of concentration attainments was nothing but a manifestation of conceit, ego. His unshaken energy was simply restlessness, and his concern about not yet having awakened was just worry. Helped by his friend to recognize these hindrances, Aniruddha was soon able to overcome them and achieve realization. Just like that. I love these stories. It's like, but wait. And I'll just go on a little further here. So this technique of simple recognition, bare attention, constitutes an ingenious way of turning obstacles to meditation, turning obstacles to meditation into meditation objects, right? So rather than really being a hindrance, they're not really a hindrance. They're the gateway to freedom, right? Practice in this way, bare awareness of a hindrance becomes a middle path between suppression and indulgence. Several discourses beautifully illustrate the powerful effect of this simple act of recognition by describing how the tempter, Mara, personification of the hindrances, who often acts, yes, as a personification of the hindrances, loses his powers as soon as he is recognized. He's a he, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. many, many teachings where the Buddha is the first one on the night of his enlightenment, of course, but also later on, you know, when he's having pains, back pains, and, you know, Mara comes to him and he says, it is said that he said, I see you, Mara. I see you, anger. I see you, panic. I see you, tightness in the gut, you know, pain in the head, right? That is compassion right there. That simple act is just recognizing and allowing it to be there is a great act of compassion. And of course, you know, when things are particularly sticky, you know, and they stay around a while, it can create a lot of suffering. So before we get to that, though, just to be clear about, just to give a little description about what each is, right? Okay. So, what is my trusty helpful sheet here? Here we go. Okay. So for desire, we all know this, and extreme form of desire is craving. Not all desires, of course, are bad, are unwholesome. We know this. But there's a real, when it becomes a hindrance, is when that thirst or that tanha, it's called, becomes a craving. And it like we know with addiction, you know, it's the Western definition of addiction is craving. So onto that. So we become attached to sense desires, something in our field of awareness. something we see, something we smell, something we hear, something we think, something we, you know, touch. You know, we want more of that, and it becomes something of an attachment. And, you know, it can be an attractive person, right? It can be a beautiful scenery. How many times have we hung on, like taking photographs and not being in the moment? Transcendent music, sweet or savory tastes or smells, right? Sensual touch, compelling story in the mind. We get attached to those, don't we? And so the Buddha asked us to be able to see clearly, to be able to sort of unlock that hindrance, is to be able to see it clearly. Right. So then there's aversion. How do we recognize it? We recognize it as ill will. We recognize it as anger. We recognize it as resentment, the number one offender, right, in our recovery. We recognize it as depression, irritability, frustration, rejection, disappointment, impatience, shame, discouragement, you know, overactive guilt, right? There's remorse and there's healthy shame, but then there's this, we attach to it and then it becomes us. It's like, I am bad. I am the mistake, right? Like, do we have to really know that this is happening? If we don't know these things are happening, we can't be free of them. So in essence, with these two, we're resisting what is, we want something else, desire and aversion. Flip side, same coin. We're pushing away, right? We're putting aversion, we're pushing something away, we're resisting. It's like holding a hot coal and about to throw it at the other person, and you are the one that gets burned. Classic Buddhist metaphor. Sloth and torpor, right? Imbalance of energy, really low, drooping, sleepiness. Like a heavy blanket has descended upon. Sharon Salzberg called it sinking mind, like an ooze, physically or mentally. Joseph Goldstein writes about sloth and torpor mind. He calls it inert as a bat hanging onto a tree and like molasses cleaving to a stick. Common struggle in meditation, common struggle. Often it's just what it is. The body's tired, haven't slept, overworked, overstimulated, or we investigate more wisely what's underneath that. Is it boredom in meditation, in life, right? Is it loneliness? Whatever it is, we can look at these things. Okay, restlessness and worry kind of manifests as excessive future planning or ruminating about past regrets, right? It's that choppy water. So my tendency to worry and I thought about it. So it's almost like I thought about this. It's like I have a superpower, like I'm a superhero because I can imagine what everybody here is thinking about me right now, what they're judging, what they're saying, what their own personal tendencies are about this situation. And then, but we actually do have a superpower, right? And that is mindfulness. Coming back, here we come back to what is the main tool. Joseph Goldstein calls it the wholesome root of this whole circus is mindfulness. And so we come back with an intention to recognize, you know, what is this? Oh, worry. And we, you know, we're like, oh, worry, here it is again. You know, can I be with this? Can I notice this? Can I be with it? Can I breathe with it? Can I give it some space? Can I see that it doesn't stay all the time, that it comes and goes, it's impermanent. Can I see where I feel it in my body? Worry is just like the storm up here, right? But if I get below that, where is it in my body? Is it in my gut? Is it in my heart? Is it in my hand? Whatever. Is it in my head? Restlessness and worry shows up all the time. You know, think about all the ways in your daily life. And then doubt. Doubt is that confusion, right? That muddy water. There's healthy and skeptical doubt, as the Buddha says. We come to this practice, we see if it works. If it doesn't, we leave it behind. Come and see. Come and see if it works for you. Skeptical doubt. We can doubt ourselves. We can doubt the practice. We can doubt the teacher and the teachings. Beyond recognizing doubt when it arises is that we can go to our trusted people, right, on the path to help us with our doubt about the practice. As far as doubt about self, well, that's a lifelong journey. And these practices are designed to help us untangle the self-doubt. And what is self-doubt all but we think it's a fixed, solid thing, right? It's, again, it's clinging to that I, me, mine. It's that small, limited. Hard nut that, or rock that over time, slowly the water can sort of wear it away, right? Takes great care. Okay. So I just want to, reiterate that these are common. These can be well taken care of with compassion, with clarity, with mindfulness, the clarity of mindfulness, with the heart of compassion, with our tools of wise investigation, and not to analyze them so much, but to really get down and say, you know, in the body, what is this? You know, what is this desire that is arising? Is there an urge to act, right? Within the safety of our practice over time, you know, being consistent, safety develops a kind of a window or a zone of tolerance and acceptance grows, and equanimity starts to grow. And we start to trust that, and the doubt lessens, right? So I think I will leave it there. And there's a few minutes left, but let's just sit for a few moments take the teachings in. What a gift they are. What a gift it is to be together today. What a gift it is that Kevin opened up this virtual community room back in March of, when was that? 2020, 3 years ago. And that we've been able to show up for ourselves all this time. And if you're new, just showing up here, welcome. And hope you can find a little peace and ease as well. All right. So if anybody has any, reflections or an experience or a question. Yes, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Ann.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks for filling in for Kevin today. I was enjoying your talks. So a couple of thoughts. One is, thanks for the mindfulness as superpower reminder. That's always good to keep in mind when it comes to kind of what's at the root of dealing with all this stuff. But so I kind of had two things, maybe comments or questions you could kind of think about. One is the mental and, or the mind body aspect of these hindrances. You kind of talked about that a little bit, and I hadn't really considered kind of the dual aspect of that. And then the other one was you were talking about kind of as you get past these, kind of like the relief, like for desire, the feeling that you've just gotten rid of a debt type thing. All these releases really seemed like letting, like how important the aspect of letting go is with these. So, yeah, I was wondering if you could kind of think about that.
Oh, yes, letting go. A lifelong journey. Great. Thank you. Okay. So the mind body aspect. So, there's, the mind, you've heard this mind body connection. Have you ever had that felt you that sense of you feel angry about something and you've stepped back to notice that it's in your mind, obviously. I'm angry. I'm having angry thoughts. I want revenge. I want to do something to hurt this person or something. And then have you noticed that just even saying that for me, I'm tensing up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that's that mind body connection. And so the idea of dropping down, is that what you mean? Like coming from the sort of cognitive
I
to
guess what I was
investigating
thinking.
it in the body.
Yeah, exactly. Like I tend to get caught up in the head and just forget that it's also reflected kind of in an emotional body state as well.
Yes, very, very natural. There's an old James Joyce wrote in one of his novels that Mr. Duffy lived quite a distance from his body. So our heads are really, disconnected. We're up in this like mental control tower, right? And we don't realize that, what's really driving the show is the body. The body wants release. The body wants to heal. So if we're angry and we know that our tendency is to feel a heaviness or a heat in our hands or we clench or we say, oh my gosh, all these thoughts of anger. Can I remember that I might be feeling tense right now? My shoulders might be, my hands might be. And then just that recognition of where it is in the body, a letting go happens often. Of course, something persists. That's a different, but often it'll let go. We're like, oh, this is, and if the body can relax, then the mind might be able to relax a little around it too. So we're just learning to take care of it on the body level.
Well,
Because we do get lost in our mind. It just becomes a cognitive exercise and we go nowhere, but oh, can I breathe into my tightness, tension?
well, that seems like part of the insight here is that in order to get past these, you have to, like, if you can get into the releasing the tension in the body, that's kind of half the battle to kind of letting go with your mind and kind of getting past it.
Yeah, and it takes practice, but then I assume you start to like really cherish it because then you start to really care for yourself even on a more deeper level. And it's you don't want to hurt yourself anymore or as much, least as possible. Yeah. And then as far as the letting go, that's a beautiful, question, but yeah, that's what he's pointing to is that it's the renunciation, it's in the letting go. That we become free of these hindrances. And that then leads the path to the factors of awakening. I mean, we're cultivating both, we're experiencing both at the same time in our lives, right? All the time, the awakening factors and the hindrances. But when we clear out the closet, we make room, make space for more of the tranquility, the joy, the equanimity, more mindfulness, more concentration. So, and then just about letting go too. Sometimes it feels like, oh, we have to let go of something, like I don't let go. No, sometimes it, just like open it slowly, make space for the clinging, not the striker, but maybe just make space for the clinging too, right? And then sometimes it's more of a, like just falling off a wagon. It's like more of a spiritual. I heard someone say that the other day. It's like more of a spiritual experience, felt sense, the letting go. It sort of just falls away. Sometimes we don't even know it. Yeah, I heard someone say that. So thank you to that person who said that the other day. But there is like a mechanical sense, and then also just a peace with it. So I hope that helps.
No, thanks. Thanks for talking about it.
June, hi. I know it's 11:03 already, so I know some of you have to go, but I'm happy to stick around. Yeah, June, you need to unmute. Yeah, it's okay. No problem.
It's kind of a quick question, I guess, maybe not, but I often have mind states that come over me. It seems they feel like mind states. They seem like mind states. And in them, I have a very difficult time making any kind of decision. Small decision, like what to eat for dinner, not just major decisions, but all kinds of decisions. And I guess, I've had this kind of thought about it, like, okay, I think this is doubt in daily life. And now, as I'm speaking it out loud, it seems kind of obvious to me because it's me doubting myself. It's doubting my ability to make a decision, right? In the time that it's happening, it feels like there's only one right answer, and I've got to come up with it. But I guess it's also just my own doubting my ability to manage my life in a way that makes sense or make a decision at all, I guess. So I guess it is kind of doubt in daily life. I mean, doubt shows up for me a lot in meditation practice specifically, particularly when I'm on retreat. So it's not surprising to me that it would be doubt. I guess I just wanted to hear if you had any thoughts about that. Thank you.
Sounds like doubt to me. Thank you. I love that. When we speak our truth out loud, it's like, oh yeah, now what do I do? But no, it's very that recognition, is super important, and then to hold it with kindness and not need to fix it right away, because it didn't come here all of a sudden. It's a lifelong pattern. It's right. So each time we recognize what it is, that's loosening the grip. That's preparing for letting go. And doubt on reach, all of these hindrances on retreat. Well, yes, exactly. Come up very strongly. And what happens there on retreat, we have time, right? We have the time. We have the, in a sense, the luxury, even though it doesn't feel like a luxury, but we have the time and the space to sit with, to investigate a little more deeply in our body where it shows up, yes, but also what's underneath the doubt. What's underneath the indecision? Is there a low-lying, what's that low-lying dissatisfaction or dis-ease in life? Is it an anxiety? Is it a depression that hasn't been addressed? Is it a boredom? I don't know. It could be a number of things, but on retreat, we have that opportunity to really to look at it a little more deeply, because it's hard to look at indecision in daily life, because if I'm indecisive a lot in my daily life, I have no space to really look at it. So to me, I think, just my what works for me is just bringing a recognition and a kindness to it, and then it's coming from somewhere. There are causes and conditions, and it's not necessarily, my fault either. It's just something that over time has grown, and that can be seen and heard and felt. Those are my thoughts right now. Thanks for your thank
Thank
you.
you, Anne. It's very helpful.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. Well, thank you all. Thanks for sticking around. All right. It's my pleasure. I love being here. Oh, and Kevin, I forgot to say, he sends his best. He's sorry not to be here, but he's taking his time.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Anne. So good to see you.
Oh, so good to see you, Abigail, every time. Yeah.
Thanks, Anne. Bye.
Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Thanks, Anne.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Somebody already wants to know when your recording wants to be up. Going to be up.
Oh, I didn't even notice. There's the chats. Here we go.
Oh no, they send direct messages to me all the time.
I should save that just for fun. I should also say something about Donna, just for practice.
I did it. Yeah, I did already. So.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I can't, thank you for doing that. Why can't I save this now?
I'll send the file to you.
Okay.
I don't ordinarily put it up, but.
I saved it. I got it. I found it. I'm not used to saving it on this column over here.
Yeah, it's. We do actually have them for a while until I delete them all. So.
Okay. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm tired, really. So, but it'll get better.
It'll pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm exhausted.
I bet you are. I bet you are. Can you rest today? Can you take some
time? Yeah, I'm hoping to, but. You know, it's like they're not direct. They haven't direct deposit a direct charge my mother's account for her monthly things since April because they're going through a transition. I'm like, then I've got to run a check over there. You know, it's just one thing or another. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be, you know, remember Kali. Yeah.
Yes. Do a little Qigong. 2 minutes of knocking on the door of life.
Yes. That's the
breathing outside. Doing some right. Spinal cord breathing outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll do that. That's a really good, excellent idea. We'll do that here post haste.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah. You did. It was an awesome talk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, great.
Great.
I never know. I mean, I literally have stacks of stuff and I'm like, I try to be linear about my planning and preparation, but that's just not my brain. And I end up just whatever comes out.
No, I think it was a great doing a presentation on the parallel with the hindrances and the character defect.
Yeah.
I always take notes because I put them up on the topic, but, you know, freeing, release, letting go, and why do we care? That's why we care, because we're going to be able to release all that. And
right. How
the connection to the three poisons, that was pretty good too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the
Yeah, I think everybody's very grateful that you guys, somebody called you a pitch hitter.
I saw that.
Yeah.
It was baseball season.
I know. I was like, that's funny. They're very, everybody is so loving and appreciative here. So.
Yeah, I know. It's.
Lovely. I love how you said this has been our 3-year retreat.
Like, yeah. Oh, God. It is, sort of.
Yeah, it is. So you look nice, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, all right. Okay.
My oxygen mask first.
That's right. Down there and hang loose. Bye now.
Bye.